When we think about friendship, the friends that we have, we ought to be seeking out wise friends. Those friends who not only know the right thing to do, and not only have the courage to do it, as we're going to talk about the idea of being courageous, but know how to do it in a wise way. To know how to accomplish things the way that God would have us to. Because it's not the kind of friend that we need that's always butting their head against a wall, trying to get things done by force. And it's not going to accomplish anything to have a friend who is too timid to not try to accomplish the things which God would have them to do. So they need to be wise in the way in which they do it. But they also need to be courageous, which carries with it the idea that you're going to be brave enough to do whatever it is you need to do as a friend to another person. However, it may not always be received. It may not always be appreciated. And it may often cause negative consequences to that individual. But this friend is one who is supposed to be attentive as well, to know what is needed in that friendship, not just what is needed to make you feel better in whatever situation you're in. True friends do those things that are most needed for others. So as we begin tonight, I want to ask you a very simple question. How many friends do you have? Do not check your Facebook status to see how many friends you have. Because as you all know, there's a lot of people probably on our Facebook pages that are not really our friends. They're people that we have encountered in life who have met us. They probably sent us a friend request, and before we knew it, we said accept and said, oh, I don't even know who that is. That's not your friends. If you were to count the number of real friends you have in your life, how many would it actually be? For most people, the number of friends, true friends that we have, will probably number less than five. And that is a very important thing to understand. Because there's a lot of people that we are friendly with, and that we associate with, and that we enjoy being around, and we enjoy their company. But when it comes to true friendship, most people have less than five. And that's not a bad thing. Because these few friends that you have are the kinds of friends that no matter what, they're going to be there. That no matter what, they're going to tell you what you need to hear. That no matter what, they're going to do what's in your best interest, whether you want it done or not. Those are your true friends. For some of us, it may only be one, and that's our spouse. That's not necessarily a bad thing. Because when it comes to true biblical friendship, we shouldn't lessen the standard that the Scriptures put on that. In Proverbs chapter 13, if you look at that real quick, Proverbs 13 and verse 20. Proverbs 13 and verse 20. It says that whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm. We need wise friendship so that we ourselves can be wise in God's service. That the friends that we have and the friends that we form, it ought to be of mutual benefit to one another. It ought to be that we help one another grow. It ought to be that we help one another become stronger and wiser, especially in our service to God. That verse that was read for us, iron sharpens iron. As I said this morning, women raised their hand to signify whether or not they had ever studied that in a women's Bible study. And all the women have studied that in women's Bible studies before. How many of us men have studied iron sharpens iron? Obviously. It's the verse that we always go to when we talk about what it means to be a man. But notice some of the things it doesn't say. It doesn't say that cheese sharpens cheese. It doesn't say that noodles sharpen noodles. It doesn't say that wet paper bags sharpen wet paper bags. And yet when we think about some of the acquaintances we have, they're often of that quality. Sadly. But that's the reality. Iron sharpens iron. During the time that this was written in Proverbs by the wise man, this was during a time where iron was still a fairly new thing. That not too long before this, it was where Israel didn't have iron. There were only certain nations who even knew how to fashion iron. And that's what made them a world power and able to conquer other places because their ability to sharpen iron. And so when this is used in the book of Proverbs, that was not just seen as something that was a good thing to be able to do to one another. And thinking of it just as we might think about using a whetstone to sharpen a knife, this was something that was highly technical. This was something that was a learned skill, was new technology, and something that was able to rise people to the ability to conquer nations if they were able to do it. So a man who sharpens iron is able to make the countenance of his friend able to face whatever it is that comes at him, because he is wise, he is talented, and he is strong enough to face it. And it takes iron to do that. You can't do it with anything else. This is the reality. There is an enemy that is on the prowl. And this enemy is seeking to destroy your family. He's seeking to cause the husband to become unfaithful, the wife to be rebellious, the children to leave the faith and have their souls destroyed. He is seeking to take everything that you hold valuable in your life and trample it underfoot and cause others who may call themselves your friend to even take it from you. That is the reality. And the reason that so many of us are not able to face it is because we have not yet been sharpened. We have not yet been motivated. We have not yet been fashioned in such a form in order to fight that battle the way that we should. And sadly, the reason for that may be because we have not surrounded ourselves with friends who are able to sharpen us in such a fashion as that. Or even worse, we have not yet been the kind of friends that can sharpen our brethren in order to face those battles. But that's the reality. Satan is after you. And Satan's going to destroy you. And Satan's going to cause all sorts of things to happen in your life to take you away from God. You need good friends. Because you can face those battles by yourself. But does not the Bible teach that it's better to have a two- and threefold cord to face those things? Isn't that a better thing? I know I wish I would have somebody by my side in the midst of those struggles. But that's what true friendship is about. And throughout the scriptures, it talks about the great value that comes from friendship. Think about Jonathan and David in 1 Samuel 18. When you think about what it means to be a friend, one of the first couples that come to mind of friends is David and Saul's son, Jonathan. 1 Samuel chapter 18, notice verses 1 through 4. David has already killed Goliath, and it's becoming known that he's the one that's going to succeed Saul on the throne. But in chapter 18, verse 1, it says, "Now when he had finished speaking to Saul, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. Saul took him that day and would not let him go home to his father's house anymore. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan took off the robe that was on him, and he gave it to David, with his armor, even to his sword and his bow and his belt." That's the way that Jonathan loved David. By all accounts, Jonathan should have felt the same way about David as Saul did, by human terms. He's going to take the place of your dad, because your dad's not worthy to be on that throne. But that's not the way that Jonathan looked at it. Even later on, it was a matter of when they were separated, Jonathan was upset about that, and David was upset about that, because their souls were knit together and they made a covenant to each other. So when I ask you how many friends you have, how many friends do you have that your soul is knit together with them? That you give them the clothes off your back, even if it means your heritage would be taken as a result. How many friends do you have that you love so much that you would forsake all the world around that you might keep that person as your friend? How many friends do you have? That's a lot more than what Facebook would provide for you. That's what true friendship looks like. In 2 Samuel chapter 1 and verse 26, we have that famous statement after David learns of the death of Saul and his beloved friend Jonathan. In 2 Samuel chapter 1 and verse 26, as David is lamenting, he says, "I am distressed for you, my brother Jonathan. You have been very pleasant to me. Your love to me was wonderful, surpassing the love of a woman." It was something that was beyond the ideas of flesh, the friendship that they had. Another group of friends that we can think about is in Daniel chapters 1 through 3, where you have Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And we've looked at some of these lessons from these four men in recent months. Daniel and his friends go into captivity, and yet they stand together, and they don't take of the king's delicacies. You don't think they were leaning upon each other? Daniel, at times when he was interpreting the dreams, would go to his friends first and get support from them. The three Hebrews who would not fall down when the statue was there and they were supposed to worship, they're standing there. And the reason being is because that friendship that existed among them was strong. And it's encouraging when you see everyone else bowing down, but you have a friend who won't. That's encouraging. But among all those Hebrews that were there, they can only count on less than five others to be standing, because those were their real friends. You go later in the scriptures to like Ruth, with Ruth and Naomi. And this is something you've studied so many times, when Naomi wants Ruth and the others to go back and to leave her and go marry and take care of their own selves. But you have Ruth saying, I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying with you. Your people will be my people. Where you go, I will go. And your God will be my God. And she stuck close, because that's what a real friend is. So again, I ask you, how many real friends do you have? But I'd also ask you to think about something else. How many people are you that kind of friend for? Because that's really the point of the lesson. It's not about just having those types of friends, but being that kind of friend. How many people can count on you to stick with them that closely throughout their life? Philippians chapter 2, you have these two men, and we made mention of them briefly this morning, of Timothy and Epaphroditus. And there was no one like Timothy in Paul's eyes when he wrote to the Philippian brethren. And he said that, I trust to send Timothy to you shortly, that I also may be encouraged when I know your state. I have no one like-minded who will sincerely care for your state. For all seek their own, not the things which are of Christ Jesus, but you know his proven character, that as a son with his father, he served with me in the gospel. Therefore, I hope to send him at once, as soon as I see how it goes with me. But I trust in the Lord that I myself may also come shortly. And then he talks about Epaphroditus, who was with him, and he wanted to send Epaphroditus back because he was one of their messengers and came to Paul. And this servant of that congregation served with Paul and even found his own life in jeopardy, that Paul said, I might have sorrow upon sorrow if he were to die, but I'm grateful that he was spared and I'm able to send him back to you. Paul commends these two men, that he as an older brother could look at these two young men and view them as sons. But one of the greatest things that you can do, parents, is when your children grow up to be adults, that you not just see them as your children, but you can see them as the kind of friends that Paul saw Timothy and Epaphroditus as being. That's a great and blessed moment, when they are your brothers and sisters fully as adults, and they're your friend. So how many friends do you have? And how many people are you a friend to? Because as we go through these different friendships, what you see among all these friendships is that you see, first and foremost, you see a loyalty. And it's a loyalty, obviously, to God, as you see in Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, as you see in Ruth with Naomi, and Timothy and Epaphroditus with Paul. But in Proverbs, rather, chapter 20, verses 6 and 7. Proverbs 20, 6 and 7. Most men will proclaim each his own goodness, but who can find a faithful man? The righteous man walks in his integrity. His children are blessed after him. One of the things that this verse is talking about is that there's a lot of people who will profess the kind of goodness, the kind of loyalty, the kind of integrity that they have. The Proverbs writer says the same thing that we say all the time. Don't talk it, walk it. Don't tell me how good a friend you are. Don't tell me how loyal you are. Don't tell me how much integrity you have. Don't tell me about how it is that you'll stick close. Don't tell me how faithful you will be. Show it to me. Real friends show that kind of loyalty. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego may have many times talked about the way in which they are not going to fall down to that idol. But it was only until the trumpet sounded and everyone fell to their knee and they were able to look around and see one another standing that they knew that they were going to be true to their word. That's what it means. Don't talk it, walk it, and show it. In Proverbs 18 and verse 24, and this verse reads different ways in different versions. I want to read a couple to you. If you have the New King James, it says, a man who has friends must himself be friendly, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. The ESV says, a man of many companions may come to ruin, which reads very differently, it would seem, than the New King James. But there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. What it seems that this verse is talking about is that we can spread ourselves too thin. That a man who wants friends must show himself to be friendly. And we know that that is true. If you want friends, then you have to be friendly. The problem with that is this. If you want friends, you have to be friendly. And you can spread yourself thin among too many people and have too many friends, have too many companions. And amongst all those companions, there's not a lot of them that's going to stick close to you. And so it concludes the same way in all of the versions. There's somebody who sticks closer than that. It may be that you have to sell out a lot of your own virtues and a lot of your own beliefs in order to have friendships. They're not going to stick with you. Because as soon as you start standing up for your own integrity, those friends will depart. But there's somebody who sticks closer than that. That's why we're supposed to have friends who are loyal. Now, I got to tell you that over the years, and I know I'm not alone, over the years, there's been a lot of people that I've considered my closest friends. They haven't been very loyal. Just to be honest. First shiny things that comes along, they chase after it. The first time it's put to the test or challenged, not to be found. But I can also say this, that among my brethren, there have been some very loyal friends from places that I never expected. That someone who wasn't always bragging about and telling me what a good friend they were to me, but in that moment where I needed them, they were there. To my surprise, they were there. We need to be perceptive. And when we look for friendship, loyalty is one of the things that we ought to value. We ought to value strength as iron sharpens iron, as the verse says. Jesus said in John 15 and verse 13 that you are my friends if you do those things that I command you. Jesus talks a lot about the idea of friendship. And he says there is no greater love that a person will have for another than to lay down his life for his friends. And Jesus uses that as an example of what friendship is supposed to look like. There's a mutual benefit that is there. There's a mutual strength that we gain from one another. Jesus uses that very idea in John 13 and verse 35 when he says to his disciples that they are to love one another as I have loved you. When people see the kind of love that you have for one another, then they will know that you are my disciple, is what Jesus tells them. That kind of love that Jesus is talking about is not just an affection to where I enjoy being in your company. It's fun being around you because we get to laugh and cut up and have fun and entertain one another. That is not what he's talking about. The kind of love that Jesus is talking about here is the kind of love where I will lay down my life for you. I will die for you and you will die for me. That's the kind of friends we are because Satan is after us. And I need you. And you need me. And when people see that kind of loyalty and that kind of strength we provide for one another, then people will know that is a child of God. That is a disciple of God. Then they will begin to say things about us that the Philistines used to say about the Israelites. We better be careful with them because their God is a great God. That's the reputation we're supposed to have because of the friendship, the love and devotion and loyalty, the strength that we have. We need friends who have character, and you saw that in the examples that we looked at in Proverbs 12 and verse 26. Proverbs 12 and verse 26, it says, "The righteous should choose his friends carefully, for the way of the wicked leads them astray." We need friends of character, friends that will not give up their godly character for you or anyone else. I want a friend who's going to maintain his character, maintain his strength, maintain his integrity, that will take a stand for what he believes in and will not back down, that he will put himself to the hazard for what he knows that God expects him to do, no matter what. That's the man I want as a friend. Because that friend will make sure that I stay strong as well. He will sharpen me. And he will prepare me to face whatever battles it is I have to face. I want friendships who have character. And that's the kind of thing that you see in those examples that we use. All those examples are people who had character that they could be counted on. We need friends, and you see this in the others, who are encouraging. In Hebrews 3 and verse 13, we are exhorted by the Hebrew writer in chapter 3 and verse 13 that we are to exhort one another daily, while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. We need friends who are not going to delay in letting you know. Don't give up. Don't fall short. While it is today, let us exhort one another. I need a friend who's more than a friend just on Sunday or just on Wednesday. I need to be a friend more than just on Sunday and more than just on Wednesday. I need to be a friend, and I need friends who are not just going to be there only when something bad is going on, but friends who exhort us and encourage us to not give up. Because again, this is the reality. Satan is looking to destroy you, kill your children, and cause your soul to be cast into hell. That's the reality. Who's helping you face that? And who am I helping to face that? Biblical friendship is important. And so let's talk about, so how do we go about sharpening some of the dull iron? Because there's a lot of kinds of friendships that we don't need. But if we do have friends who are this way, there's things we can do to sharpen them. One of those types of friends is the complainer. The one that whines about things. This is the person that something has happened to them in the past. And so they go about all the time saying, why me? Why is somebody else blessed and not me? Why did this happen to me? Why did this happen to my family? Why did this happen to my parents? Why did this happen to whatever it is? Why did this something happen in the past? And they're so paralyzed by the past that they can't move forward. And that person is somebody who cannot sharpen you. But that's a person who needs to be sharpened. Philippians 2 and verse 14 says that we're to do all things without murmuring and complaining. And that's the way that we shine as lights in this world. A true friend will not let his friend be paralyzed by the past, but will encourage him. If you're going to shine as a light in this world, you're going to have to let go of your past. You're going to own it. Yes, it did happen. There's no denying it. It happened. What are you going to do now? You can't live in the past. You can't undo the past. But you can change your future. Don't be paralyzed because of what happened to you. Another type of friend is the one who's always worrying about something. This one, instead of being so concerned about the things of the past that he's paralyzed, this one is so concerned about the future. Instead of, why me or why this, he's like, what if? I would do this, but what if? I would teach a Bible class, but what if? I would try to do something else in the service of God, but what if? I would try to be a deacon or an elder one day, but what if? And they're so terrified of what may happen, it paralyzes them today, and they can't move forward. This kind of friend also cannot sharpen you, but he is one who can be sharpened. Philippians chapter 4, Paul reminds, and we've been looking at this passage over and over and over again, we're to be joyful people. And when we think about the things of this life, we're not supposed to be worrying or anxious about anything. But in everything, by prayer and supplication, letting our requests be made known to God. And Paul reminds the Philippian brethren of that very thing. Because this is the way the peace of God helps us in life. Jesus said in Matthew 6 and verse 33, to seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you. Jesus said, don't be worrying about all of these things. Don't be worried about what's going to happen tomorrow, because you have sufficient worry for today, and you will never deal with what you need to be dealing with today if you are always worried about tomorrow. Jesus is the best friend you've ever had. And Jesus tells you, stop it. Don't be worrying about tomorrow. You deal with today, and that's sufficient. Sometimes we may have a friend who's the indecisive one. This is the one that's not overly concerned about the past. He's not overly worrisome about the future. But he's in this situation where, I don't know. I don't know what to do. This is the friend you have who is always waiting to be rescued. They don't take responsibility for their own life. And they're waiting for someone else to step in, to give them the answer, to give them the direction, to rescue them from the problem that they're in. They're indecisive. The scriptures tell us that as Christians, we are bold and courageous. The Bible tells us that we are bold and courageous. if you miss that, the Bible tells us that we are bold and courageous. We are those who walk by faith and not by sight. Most of us men love watching some of the war movies or sports movies where you have that scene where everybody's like, I don't know. I don't know if we can win this game. I mean, the odds are against us. I don't know if we can win this battle. I mean, we're outnumbered. We're only a few, and we're short on ammunition or weaponry or whatever it is. And someone steps up, and they give that inspiring speech. And by the end of it, the speakers are rattling because of the cheer that's going on from the people around them because they've been sharpened. In the midst of whatever you're going through, it's real easy to be this person. I don't know what to do. I need help, but it's real easy to get into that. I just need somebody to rescue me. You're the one who needs to work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. You are not a friend if you step in and solve the problem for the person you consider your friend. A friend steps in and says, you need to take care of this, and I will stand by your side. And I will help you, and I will hold you accountable. But you have to work out your own salvation with fear and trembling, brother. Sister, you're the one who's going to have to face this problem, and you're going to have to fix it with God's help. Because that's what you can do. We have said in this lesson, and we say over and over again, Satan is seeking to destroy you. That's not a platitude. That's reality. And he will destroy you because he hates your guts and he hates your soul and he wants you to burn forever in hell. And he will do everything he can to destroy you. And if I keep sitting back and waiting for someone else to solve my problems, Satan has won the victory. The scriptures tell us in places like Philippians 2 and verse 12 to work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. James 1 and verse 22 tells us, don't be a hearer of the word only, but be a doer of the work. In chapter 2, the chapter is filled with the idea, what good is faith without works? It is meaningless. I heard one this week talking about what he wrote in the margin of his Bible. Not only is faith without works dead, it is stupid. And I thought that was a good way to put it. And that's true. It's stupid. It's stupid to think that anything's going to be accomplished when I have all the faith in the world, supposedly, but I am not willing to put my feet on the ground and start marching. It's meaningless. We need to sharpen that friend who is indecisive. We have the loner. This is our friend who never goes anywhere, who never participates, who never gets involved in other things, but there's always a good reason for it. They don't feel welcome, they don't feel wanted, they don't feel appreciated, they don't feel whatever it is. But for whatever reason, it's easy to become a hermit. And it's easy, especially when we are hurting, and that's usually the person who is the loner. It's a person that's been hurt by something. And because of that, they don't want to run the risk of being hurt again. But this loner is one who's going to come to destruction if they stay the loner. Because as we've even been studying in our worship class, God doesn't want us to be loners. He wants us to associate with our brethren and to strengthen one another. In Ecclesiastes chapter 4, we made reference to this just a moment ago. But in Ecclesiastes chapter 4, in verses 9 through 12, the wise man says this, two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, one will lift up his companion. But woe to him who is alone when he falls, for he has no one to help him. Again, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? Though one may be overpowered by another, two can withstand him, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken. Our friend who is becoming the loner needs to be sharpened. Yes, you've been hurt. And because of that, you don't want to run the risk of being hurt again. But you need to understand who your true friends are. That God will never leave you nor forsake you. And he is the greatest friend you will ever have. And that I am making a covenant with you that you can count on me as well. And the reason being is because I pledged my life to Christ the same as you. And because of that, we are pledged to one another. And this cord that we have formed is stronger than anything the world will throw at either one of us. So, brother, let's be about the work. Let's be about associating with our brethren. Let's be about spending time with them. Let's be about getting outside of our house where we drive ourselves crazy with our own thoughts. And let's be that shining light that we're called to be and stop hiding ourselves under the bushel of our own rooftop. That's not where God wants us, either one of us. The kind of friend that we're wanting to be and the kind of friend that we need around us is that godly friend. He's the one that's that warrior who's strong and courageous. That no matter what it is that's going on, he's always going to be there. And he may not always do what we want, but he is going to do what's needed. Proverbs 27 verse 5 says this, that an open rebuke is better than love carefully concealed. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. It does no one good to whisper in their ear that everything's going to be okay when we know what's wrong and we know what's needed and we know that that person needs to be sharpened like iron sharpens iron because they are not ready to face the world where they're at. It's not good for us to tell them that's okay. An open rebuke would be better than love that's carefully concealed. If someone is telling you that's okay and your life is not where it needs to be, those are deceitful kisses. But they're kisses. And we enjoy that. But we fail to see that it's not helping us. And it's not sharpening us. In 2 Timothy 1 and verse 7, Paul reminds Timothy as he writes his second epistle to him that God did not give us a spirit of fear, but of courage. This spirit of courage, the spirit of power, Paul has to tell Timothy this because it may be that Timothy's starting to be ashamed of Paul because it's easy to happen. But he reminds him, this is the spirit that God gives each one of us. Be powerful. Be courageous. Paul reminds him at the end of that letter that he has already fought the good fight. He has finished the race. He has kept the faith. There's laid it for him a crown of righteousness which belongs to everyone who loves his appearing. And it doesn't matter who it is who may judge you on this earth. According to anything, you're going to stand before God who is a righteous judge. So you be strong. You be courageous. You maintain the faith. You be the kind of person, Paul is telling Timothy, that I know you to be. You continue being that person even after I'm gone. You continue. We also have in passages like Ephesians 6, 10 through 18, where the one who is the faithful friend will remind us over and over again that God has given to us armor. That no matter what it is that Satan or the world throws at you, that you can be strong and you can stand. And every time I look at this passage, that word stand, that's used over and over and over again in those first few verses, that you may stand. And having done all to stand. And in the evil day to be able to stand. And when Satan throws things at you, you can withstand. Over and over and over again, God has given you armor. Sounds a little bit like what Jonathan did with David. That he took his own sword, his own bow, his own cloak, and he gave it to David. Just like God has all these pieces of armor that belong to him. And God has taken it off and said, here. You don't feel strong? The armor you have is not yours. It's the armor of God. It belongs to him. With it, he has already crushed Satan under his feet. And we're just waiting for the day that he is cast into hell with his angels and all those who do his will. And the rest of us get to go to heaven. And the way that God did that was because of the armor that he has. And he's given it to you. Who can defeat you? Who can vanquish? Who can destroy? No one, my friend. Let's sharpen each other. Let's have friends that sharpen us. And let's be the kind of friend to others that Jesus Christ himself has been to us. And so that's the question I do want to leave with you tonight. Is that have you been the kind of friend that Jesus has been to you? It's convicting for me to think about that. Because as it is when I say that most of us can count on less than the fingers of one hand how many real friends, this kind of friend that we have in this life. It scares me to think about how many people am I that kind of friend for. Let's strive to be better at that. That's what lovely friendship consists of. And that's the kind of thing that draws others to us and to God Himself. So let's be those kinds of people. If you need help in that, and God help us all in that. But if you need help in that, and you need prayers, and you need to study, let us know. Let's sharpen one another in the holy faith. If you need to start tonight by being a child of God, the waters of baptism are ready. If you're ready to make that confession before this audience of people, we can take care of the sin that's in your life tonight. Let us help you if we can. As together we stand and sing this song, won't you please come?